and welcome to episode 22 of the Nicely Done podcast. I'm Satya, I'm a writer, and I have a lot of trouble remembering my passwords.
Hi everyone, my name is Amrita, I'm a journalist in New York, and I'm Pfizer boosted, baby!
Yay! Awesome! To everyone who's hearing us, please go get your booster shots. A special welcome to Maria Ressa and Dmitry Muratov, and those people who support the vision of people like Maria and Dmitry. So for people who are not in the know, Maria and Dmitry are two journalists from Philippines and Russia, respectively, and were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for 2021 for their efforts to safeguard freedom of expression, which is a precondition for democracy and lasting peace. Thank you to courageous people like them and the people who support them that we are all able to have news, views, and everything in between.
With all of the wrapping up that's happening, 2021 is over, which is wild. And in the same tone, this episode is also going to be sort of a wrap up. So if you feel like, where did the year go? Maybe this week's episode will be a bit helpful. So for today, we're looking back at 2021 and bringing back the most memorable moments in pop culture, science, world politics. And together we'll be unpacking how they impacted the year that passed and the years to come. So let's get the show on the road. We thought that since we are technically pop culture journalists, we would begin with our favorite theme and topic, so to speak. So
yeah.
We can, like, talk about some of our favorite and most memorable moments in pop culture of 2021. First moment is the Free Britney movement. And arguably one of the biggest things to happen in the world of pop culture is that Britney Spears is now free. So for all of us who may have missed out on what happened, here it is in a nutshell. So for 13 years, Britney Spears was under a legal conservatorship with her father, which means that her lives, the decisions, and the way that she was running things and where her money went, which was like a $60 million fortune, were all legally controlled by a guardian, which was her father. For all those years, her fans rallied to set her free, finding clues in the videos and photos she posted on social media. And people called them crazy for like the whole of the decade, you know? And it was really interesting because they thought that it was a conspiracy theory, and this was actually a conspiracy theory that literally came true and set her free. I was actually recently listening to her songs because, like, I was in a whole like Britney mode. Mm-hmm. And all of her songs, remember, like, Overprotected and like Toxic and all of that, like, when you hear them now, they're really like, it's really disturbing to hear how she's talking about no one's listening, I keep talking, no one's like, no one believes me and all. Anyway, it's crazy. But in June, she spoke in June 2021, she spoke passionately in a court at a hearing about how she was a prisoner in her life. And that was the first time that she had been given agency to speak up. After multiple hearings, Britney Spears was finally set free and given her life back on November the 12th. I think this is the Free Britney movement, but what I think is significant to note here are two things. For me, I see it as a very fan-heavy moment, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, for years, no one believed them, and for years, Britney had no agency to speak. But the Free Britney movement and the activists that fueled this moment really kept it going on, like, Instagram, on, like, TikTok, and, like, started talking about how, look at her eyes in this photo, like, look at how she's waving, look at how she's smiling, something's wrong, something's up. And I think, like, ultimately the attention that it got towards the end prompted so much, like, you know, pressure on even her family, for instance, to kind of like have this, to give this moment of Britney in court that much importance. So, and I think she even said later that she wouldn't be free if it weren't for her fans. And I think it's important to note how, like, fans and engagement with celebrities became more of a loyal relationship, not just in Britney's case, but also in a Taylor Swift case, which we'll be talking about later. And the second thing of importance is just that I think it opened up this discussion about legal guardianship and conservatorships in America, and how, like, a lot of people have actually after that spoken up about, like, they're not celebrities, but they have faced, like, abuse and exploitation at the hands of their legal guardians. And, you know, this is just like a conversation that was happening for many decades, but it just put, like, Britney just, like, put spotlight on it. So I think in pop culture, it is so important because she was like so iconic. But I think even in like American policy and change, and like how especially older people, these are usually people who are under conservatorships, are like older or stated mentally unstable. And it would be really interesting to see how for the next few years, how this is going to kind of change, hopefully in a better direction, how these decisions are made.
Awesome. Yeah, that's very cool. And it's interesting that a lot of these pop culture moments have women in the forefront. The next one has two women in the frame, one interviewing the other. So Meghan Markle's interview with Oprah Winfrey in March of 2021 was a path-breaking moment, because here was the first woman of color to ever be married into the royal family, speaking about her experience as a working royal. What does that even mean, right? And in the interview, Meghan herself says that she had no idea going into it that what does that entail. I think the whole world watched this interview, mostly because the British royal family is such a subject of intrigue for everyone. Meghan spoke about conversations around the skin color of her and Harry's children, them being sidelined by the royal family, of having suicidal thoughts, and, you know, a lot of other mental health related issues during this interview. And they also kind of went into the couple split from the royal family, their life today, and like, you know, their plans going forward. What was, I think, particularly emotional and struck an emotional chord with people was here was a self-made woman in her 30s who kind of, I think, felt helpless and like, you know, she had no agency, and she was going to be a mother. It was all very emotional. And I think anything related with the royal family kind of has its baggage, because their lives have impacted millions of people around the world. So just to see how it all boils down to even their personal lives was, I think, in some way cathartic or strange for people like me from India, who come from a country that this family kind of helped colonize. So even after the interview, there was a lot of speculation about how much truth was really in the things that she said, that she was an actress. Can we really believe her? And that, you know, she was working to separate Harry from her family. And a full grown adult Harry came on the show and said many times that he did what he had to do. But still, it's always like, you know, the exotic foreigner, what does she understand about the customs and all of that? And you can't deny that here was a woman taking a stand and taking on one of the most influential families around the world and saying, okay, no more. And that was quite inspiring. And ladies and gentlemen, if Harry can stand up to the Queen of England for his wife, your boyfriend or husband can very well take a stand up for you in front of his family.
Nice. 2022 goals. What a great point you're making about how so much that happened in this year that has been memorable for, you know, creating these moments that history will remember were kind of in a way led by women. So here's another woman who took charge of her story. So I'm talking about Taylor Swift, who is re-recording her songs. And there have been many stories about why she's doing so and, you know, how she's making going back in time and kind of like recreating her own narrative. Mm-hmm. So again, a quick reason why she's doing this. Basically, she recorded her first few albums with a label called Big Machine Records around 2005. But when her contract expired in 2018, the label sold all of the music to another company that was owned by this man called Scooter Braun, who was like infamous for being like, quote unquote, a bully to musicians and artists. And Taylor Swift was pretty mad after that. So she said that, you know, if she's lost all control of her music and she had no rights over her own artwork. So she said, okay, I made them the first time, so I'll just do it all over again.
Yeah.
And I think it was just such a, she was really inspiring in the way that she just took back control of her music and like, you know, her story. So again, what she's doing now is going back and redoing all her famous songs. So if a fan plays a song that was recorded by her earlier, the money that comes from streaming that song goes to her old record label. And when they play Taylor's version, you know, you're playing something that she owns herself. So again, fans have helped. And this is a significant moment to kind of say no to bullies. And it goes to show that, like, even some of the biggest artists and some of the most famous faces are not safe from, you know, these contractually obligated, what's happening behind the scenes in these big record labels. And I also wanted to bring up how this is a discussion happening parallelly in all music industries, not just in the US. But in India, there was a lot of contention around this one particular music label, T-Series, and how they've always had singers and artists who, when they are signed on, when they are pretty early in their career, they are not exactly sure about what these 500 clauses are, and they sign them anyway, and then they later realize they have lesser and lesser control over their music. So I think it's also, like, important for all of us who are consuming music to know where it's coming from and to know what record label is, kind of, you know, what they stand for and what the artists and musicians are finally getting in the end. And I think it is a good call to all of us to remember where our music is coming from, because honestly, like, a stream on Spotify is just so easy that we don't really think about it. But this was an important conversation brought forth in this year, I thought.
And, you know, every time I hear news about Taylor, I'm reminded of this thing of, like, it doesn't take much to be a difficult woman, and that's why there's so many of us. It's a sarcastic comment of, like, anything, if you do a little bit over what you're supposed to do, you're considered difficult and tough, like, you know, it all, like, negative vibes. And it's her music, man. Let her re-record it 10 times. Don't listen to it if you don't want to. I don't know why so many people were, like, miffed that why is she doing this. From one amazingly talented singer-songwriter to another, our next moment comes courtesy Adele. So in May of 2020, after months of speculation, posted a picture of herself on her birthday, on her 32nd birthday. And from the photograph, it was quite obvious that the singer-songwriter seems to have shed some weight. And again, this kind of sent the internet into a meltdown. Adele, who has also gone through a divorce, said that this was for herself and no one else. And, you know, this was her way of retaining some control in her life and on her life, and battle some of the anxiety she'd been having. But there were, like, these terrible conversations all around the internet about how she looks better now or how she looks tired, just like noise. And honestly, is it anybody else's business to comment? But there were also these other allegations, which are more hurtful allegations that Adele is doing all of this, and, you know, and this is sending a wrong message to women around the world who are struggling with acceptance and body positivity. And, you know, they kind of saw her as a role model, and her doing this kind of just sent a bad message to women around the world. And regarding comments about her look, in an interview with Vogue, she said that, you know, her body has been objectified her entire career, which has been over 12 years now. And it's, even when she was heavier, it's when she's lost weight. She also said that some women around the world were hurt, and she visually represented a lot of women. And with in another interview with, again, the one and only Oprah Winfrey, she said, quote, "It's not my job to validate how people feel about their bodies. I feel bad that it's made anyone feel horrible about themselves, but that's not my job. I'm trying to sort out my own life, and I can't add another worry." And honestly, I guess I understand why some women might have felt let down, because there's this whole conversation about body positivity. But I think people need to understand that body positivity does not only come from heavier women or thinner women. It has to come from women of all shapes and sizes. So just making Adele and putting this pressure on her that you are the symbol for body positivity was a job that she did not sign up for. But in November 2021, she released a fourth studio album, 30, and it's been received extremely well everywhere. So let's focus on the craft. Let's focus on the art that they're putting out into the world.
Yeah, let's go easy on Adele.
All the way from Britain to India, the trouble with being in the media's eye continues. In October, Aryan Khan, son of Bollywood superstar Shah Rukh Khan and interior designer Gauri Khan, was arrested on October 3rd during a cruise ship drugs bust case. It sounds very intense, but it has all boiled down to nothing. Aryan Khan was detained along with many others after Narcotics Control Bureau, NCB, raided a ship set to sail from Mumbai to Goa. So there were charges of alleged international drug trafficking and for saying things like, quote, have a blast, unquote. And Aryan Khan was in jail for over 3 weeks, repeatedly denied bail before he was finally granted bail on his fourth attempt along with two others on October 28th. So during all of this, there was so much increased media scrutiny on everything Shah Rukh Khan has ever said and done. And his patriotism was questioned. There was obviously this heavy conversation about nepotism in Bollywood and how star kids have it off easy. And some of the younger stars were also brought in for questioning. And, you know, there was just so much noise on, does Aryan Khan deserve what he's getting? And honestly, it just gave me such a flashback to 2020, Sushant Singh's death, where everybody had an opinion. But towards the end of November, the Bombay High Court released a detailed order granting bail to the actor's son and others. And the court has said that it has not found any positive evidence against the accused to show that they conspired to commit an offense. So they had nothing to go on, apparently. So then there's all of this conversation about then why was it, you know, made out to be this whole big thing? And did he suffer because he was the superstar's son? And maybe once all the facts are available to us, we'll actually be able to know. But the most heartwarming thing among all of this was that there was a flood of stories about the generosity and magnanimity of Shah Rukh Khan. Scoop did a compilation of all the lovely stories of Shah Rukh Khan taking time out to just be a good human being with the little and big things that he did. And I'll tag it in the show notes. And it was just so heartwarming to read, from journalists saying how he got up to help them after they tripped on their way up the stage and just making sure he was fine, to like making time to talk to some singer's mother just because she was such a big fan, to, you know, just being apologetic and being just a nice, warm person. And yes, it's what any of us would also do, right? Do we really need to celebrate someone being a nice human being? But when Shah Rukh Khan does that for you, it makes you feel so special, and it's a story you remember forever. He doesn't have to do it. And a lot of people don't. So when there was this outpouring of love on his birthday, November 2nd, it was very heartwarming for all of us to read.
Yeah, it's crazy how people think that they possess everything about Indian stars, right? Like their stories, their lives, their families, they're all ours, which is, again, like the Sushant Singh thing. Like, you know, you felt like you owned it. So you could say whatever you wanted about it. It's terrible, tragic, and such a, I mean, Shah Rukh Khan speaks about how like the responsibility of what comes with being him is blessing, bane, everything, you know. So
interestingly, I don't have a personal Shah Rukh Khan story, but I remember being in a crowd watching something with you, and we were convinced he was looking directly at us when he was talking the whole time. We were he is talking to us, and he was so charming. There was like just a 50 or 40 press people, and he was, I think, announcing a new show or something. I don't even remember what the event was, but I was just looking at him like with the biggest smile on my face. And I remember you were there, and we were just like, the whole time we were like, he's so smart, no? He's so witty, no?
So these were our favorite pop culture moments. Bringing the attention to more stories of the world, because so much has happened in 2021, and we want to like go from like pop culture to world politics. And so much happened. It's been a very heavy year for politics, and we had You know, it was really interesting to pick moments that were really memorable this year. But I think since both of us were in the US for 2021, there was a flood of political stories. And, you know, like the country got a new president, finally got one who speaks in full sentences. It also got the first female vice president. But one of the most significant moments was when former president Donald Trump got banned from Facebook and Twitter. And people who were subjected to his like daily yelly tweets and posts for years were kind of are enjoying this kind of like quiet and silence. This came after his online behavior was consistent with spreading misinformation, creating chaos after the January 6th Capitol riots in Washington, D.C. So that was like, that was the news of the world. I mean, it was everywhere. And freedom of expression on social media is actually such a delicate thing, right? Like it was just so significant that these dozens of platforms, and then after Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and like Google and Apple banned him, like people just like hopped onto that train and they were like, you know, he probably doesn't use this platform, but we don't want him on our platform. So it's very significant that these platforms came together in that effort, recognized safety and security while keeping in mind what it means to have freedom of expression on the internet. And made a big move to suspend the president of the United States. So it's like, it's more significant because since we come from India, we know that like, you know, censorship, freedom of expression, tricky everywhere is just so sensitive in the country because there are things you can say, can't say, and Indians who live in India have that sense automatically that they have grown up with. In April of this year, the Indian government actually ordered Facebook and Twitter to take down posts of people, hundreds of posts of people showing how bad COVID was in their areas and neighborhoods. Hmm. And this comes because even if the post doesn't violate a Twitter policy, and the posts were taken down because in India, these companies need to follow the law of the land and not company policy. So they needed to take it down because that was what local law dictated. But not to say that people who have posed a threat have not been banned in India. Some final news came after Twitter finally suspended the most intense person in India. When Kangana Ranaut and her Twitter account was suspended after she and her thoughts were seen as a possible security threat after a West Bengal poll violence. And you know, her tweets were seen as a call of action and violence. And I think not even that it was probably it came after 500 really intense tweets. But again, not to say she was nicer before, her vitriol was getting like super intense for the whole year and a half before that. And she spewed it in all directions. Like she literally had a thing to say about like mental health, movies, media, journalists, politics, comics, crime, police, drugs, celebrities. Like she was everywhere. And, you know, it's just important to understand that a lot is going on around the world with social media censorship, who can say what. And I think it's a more like nuanced argument here because there have been times that like, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram have suspended journalists and comics and like, you know, people who stand up and say something for the government or against the government, who are critical of the government's policies, who make fun of politicians in, you know, in a way that is their profession. And a lot always happens around this. And there is in everyone's minds, there is a right and a wrong. But again, it's just this super delicate balance of like what is responsible to say on social media, what is critically important to say for or against the government. And I think that, you know, I hope we can continue to have this conversation a little more responsibly without just mouthing off your like opinions on social media. So just like read and be like, not to our listeners who are very well read, but like just it's important to just be a little more responsible. And
But what I really liked was how every tweet of Donald Trump had like a, this seems to be misinformation, fact check. Every tweet had that, and somehow it was worse than having your account suspended. Everything he said had that warning label on it. And what a thing for the president of the United States to have.
Oh, but it didn't stop him from having lots of COVID opinions.
Like. Yeah. Gosh. Okay. From United States to closer home. In November, tens of thousands of Indian farmers have cleared the three protest sites on the outskirts of our Indian capital, New Delhi. They had occupied these sites for more than a year and demanded the repeal of controversial farm laws. And these laws were finally scrapped by the government in November of this year. In a stunning reversal, Prime Minister Narendra Modi apologized and repealed the laws, which were actually commonly referred to as the Black Laws, which aimed at deregulating agricultural markets. So what happened? So in November of 2020, farmers mainly from the grain bowl states, Punjab, Haryana, and Uttar Pradesh, decided to march to New Delhi to demand the withdrawal of these farm laws. When farmers were stopped from entering the capital by the police, they pitched their tents, blocking three main highways leading to the huge city of New Delhi. And these farmers refused to clear these sites unless the government revoked the laws. Even as the country was reporting hundreds of thousands of COVID-19 cases on a daily basis. So in the middle of like a terrible second wave, the protests were ongoing. And for a year, the farmers braved New Delhi's biting winter and like scorching heat and record monsoons. They suffered police violence and were called terrorists and separatists by the BJP leaders and even a section of the Indian media. The fact that Modi actually apologized and repealed the laws is a huge, huge victory for these farmers. There are still a few demands from the farmers on the table, including a state set minimum support prices for all the crops and not just rice and wheat, which is what the current status is. But this repeal has been celebrated by all the farmers as a big victory. I actually have a few friends in New Delhi who on their way back from other parts of the country or something were on this highway for the first time early December, and they posted pictures saying, after such a long time, all these sites have been cleared. It feels almost unreal, right? That all these people went back home.
Yeah, that was a big moment, big moment, and end to such a long, long march protest. You know, it's like, it's really interesting how so much can happen in 1 year, but sometimes so much can happen like just within a few hours, the whole map of the world changes, which is what happened in August of this year, which is within a matter of hours after the US troops withdrew from Afghanistan, the Taliban took over Kabul and established their rule in this like move that sent like a hot shock across the world. And this is obviously one of the biggest world news. So I don't want to like go over everything that happened, but apart from the political consequence of their rule, and despite their repeated assurances on their press briefings, like they have like a press conference and everything now, you know, they are promising to be more liberal with their laws, knowing that the Taliban is this ultra conservative, now political party. But, you know, even their promises and assurances of to be more open with women and their demands to be educated and employed, the takeover still means that their rights and freedoms of what has been fought for like decades took like several steps back. Women's education, employment, their personal movements and freedoms have been restricted in Afghanistan, and several political experts have then warned that even if they appear to have a little more, patience for these demands, that's not a long-term promise, and they don't expect that promise to be kept. So there's, you know, this like, I remember like at that time also there was this like immediate worry, and like our news feeds were flooded with information about how women were escaping, how Afghani women how women from Afghanistan were talking about how their daughters and how their granddaughters, they have no hope for them in this country. And, you know, that was like such an immediate and pressing thing. And I think that after months pass, people kind of left that news from that part of the world a little alone. But I did read from this one activist who has stayed back in Afghanistan, and she said that, you know, she's going to continue hosting this girls-only school that she runs out of her own, like, money and, like, her own place. And she said that the world is going to forget about this very quickly. But all you need to do is remember that we are here, and, like, some of us are still fighting, although thousands fled this Taliban-controlled state. But sometimes the thing to remember here is that this might seem like a problem that is so far off, but, you know, these moments of politics in one part of the world can cause unexpected ripples in time and places of the future, like how, you know, the refugee crisis from that is now currently, like, happening in Europe, and, like, how that displaces a lot of policies in education and employment, like, it all comes back. So, you know, it's still important to not forget that this happened, and continue to kind of be open and engaged to this news. Anyway, some grim and some not so grim news from politics, but the next kind of segment that we thought we'd have is a little bit to celebrate some moments or mark some moments in science, because this has, again, also been a super important year for science.
Yeah.
One of the biggest win that has come from 2020 and 2021 has been that we have not one, but many, multiple vaccines in different countries to fight a disease that paralyzed the entire world. And, you know, I remember when we were deep into the first wave, I remember every day people would just read news, and there was no end to that cycle of news. Like, how many people have tested positive, how many active cases there are in my country, in other countries, and that was it. And all people were waiting for was vaccines in 2020. Now in 2021, 3 billion people across the world have been fully vaccinated, and over 8 billion people have received at least their first dose of vaccine. So what saved the world? COVID-19 vaccines and the people who worked tirelessly to make them quick, safe, and in time. And these hundreds of scientists worked on it in different parts of the world in different timelines. But I do want to, like, bring some context to, you know, people, these particular four people who have worked on developing this, you know, innovative way of creating a vaccine, which the COVID-19 vaccine has, is developing the vaccine through the mRNA. This is actually a really fascinating, like, you know, just process. And I remember I read up on this. There is an excellent piece that we will attach in our show notes. So, you know, we are, like, I get it, like, it's just been a lot this year to deal with, like, to read up on how vaccines are made. But this Time magazine piece that named these four scientists the heroes of the year 2021, their names are Kismekia Corbett, Barney Graham, Kathleen Carrico, and Drew Weissman. These four scientists are kind of not fully credited. Their work has backed by hundreds of scientists across the world, like I said, but these are the scientists that work on the mRNA method of developing vaccines. And just the reading up on it, their work, and, like, they've been working for, like, decades on mRNA, and how finally with COVID they were able to direct, you know, their years of work towards something that, you know, the world really needed so badly at the time. But the, like, reading up about how sophisticated the science of making these vaccines is so amazing. And, you know, like, it was really interesting to know that the work has been happening since early 2000s. And in 2020 and 2021, finally, to use that academic knowledge and those papers that they published, and to put it all into effect with one of the tightest and, you know, most pressured deadlines that the world has ever seen. That is a work of pure heroism. So we salute these heroes. So please take the vaccine if you haven't, and trust the science.
Yeah. And New York Times has this really nice COVID page that kind of has all the information you need and then like many more pages. Very interesting. They have this page on vaccinations and it says that researchers are currently testing 113 types of vaccines in clinical trials on humans. And 52 vaccines are in just testing safety and dosage stage. 48 vaccines are have expanded to safety trials and 44 vaccines are in large scale efficacy studies. 16 vaccines are in early or limited use, 9 are approved for full use, and 10 vaccines were abandoned after trials. So a big shout out to all the people who have made the Pfizer's, the Moderna's, and the AstraZeneca vaccines of the world happen, and we have taken them and all of that. But there are going to be so many stories that never see the light of the day, who were also equally passionately working on finding a solution. So they might not get the recognition, but they'll get all the good karma. So while the whole world was rushing to keep the humans of this planet alive, there was also another race happening almost simultaneously where the richest people of the world were trying to get to Mars or just away from Earth, it felt like. I think this whole ongoing thing of who is going to reach space first between Jeff Bezos, Richard Branson, and Elon Musk, it was a conversation that was happening for a very long time, and Elon Musk was sort of pegged as the person to beat because of SpaceX's company. But Sir Richard Branson beat Jeff Bezos to become the first private industrialist to send himself to space in his own vehicle. And since then, Jeff Bezos has also made the journey, and I think he also took the Star Trek actor, William Shatner. And, you know, he is 90 years old, William Shatner, and he was the oldest person to go into space. Well, at least 66 miles up into space anyway. But Jeff Bezos got a lot of cred for taking the Star Trek actor into space because of the fandom and the love that the actor has. But I would also like to say that all of these efforts require a lot of resources, not just time, energy, and all of that, but also actual resources from the planet of Earth, like fuel and, you know, all of that. So while we are racing to also put a band-aid on our climate change and, you know, fix the environment, these efforts have it's not like it's gassing up your car. It's a monumental effort. So the footprint of it, what it's going to take out from our race to fix climate change, all of that is kind of very tied up. And in a year when people are dying because of lack of access to vaccines, should a billionaire be spending millions of dollars to take a actor to space? I don't know the answers to these questions, but so from there to sports, my favorite sports story of this year was when a woman stood up and said, I am not participating. I love it. So four-time Olympic gold medalist Simone Biles withdrew from competing in the Tokyo Olympics, citing the twisties, which is a mental block in gymnastics in which competitors lose track of their positioning midair. Sounds terrifying, but it has nothing on what this woman has been through. Simone is 24 years old and she's won 7 Olympic medals, including 4 golds, and has battled mental health issues and unexpected loss of a family member during the summer games, all the while preparing to testify at a Senate hearing regarding the sex abuse investigation of former USA gymnastics team doctor Larry Nassar. So at the Olympics, everyone was like, Simone is here, she's going to add to the medal pile, and there was a lot of expectations from her, but she withdrew during the team final and then withdrew ahead of all around final and individual events of vault, uneven bars, and floor exercise. She did compete in the balance beam final and she won a bronze. Honestly, just like that, she changed the conversation around mental health for athletes. But I'll go a bit further and say, not just athletes, even for us, in this unprecedented pandemic world, all these ideas that we carry around our head, like, let's just power through, let's just get past this, let's not think about it for now and focus on what needs to be done. Simone saying no to to competing in the Olympics, you know, the biggest sporting event of the world, and saying that her mental health was more important, just changed the conversation of, you know, what mental health even means and what it should mean to us. Simone has since then joined the mental health startup Cerebral as chief impact officer and says that she's committed to being a mental health advocate. I have seen a few interviews of her since this, where she, I think it was at the, where she was testifying at the Senate hearing, that, you know, it is a miracle that she has even made it as far as she has, and she should have taken a break earlier. And what a great role model for people that, you know, we so often fear that I have this big opportunity. If I take the time I need now, you know, something that's due to me will be taken away from me. Or so I think the most important thing in our lives is our mental health and our physical health. So let's not act like it's something that you can come back to later. I really applaud Simone for being just 24 years old and at an Olympics level, taking the stand and saying that my mental health is more important than this.
Yeah, so brave, so wonderful. Also reminded me of a smaller act of courage by another sportswoman. I love these stories that are all led by women, but Naomi Osaka said that she is not going to do press conferences this year because she doesn't like, I mean, it was affecting her mental health and it caused so much backlash because, you know, a part of the job of appearing for big tournaments in tennis associations is that the players are obligated to appear for press conferences, and she was fined and she was like, that's fine. That's okay. You know, I'm going to pay the fine. That's fine. You know, women saying and putting their own mental health first, big win. So I think with that, what a great way to put all this together, and you know, while remembering 2021 and while remembering all these amazing stories, bringing in all these learnings and looking forward to 2022. But for now, that's it for our show. Thank you so much for listening to us this past year. If you like what you hear, find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Also, come say hi. We love engaging with our listeners. Tell us what you want to hear from us and what you don't. All our episodes are streaming on major podcasting platforms, so give us a listen. This episode was brought to you by the smaller things in life that don't make it quite to the most memorable list of 2021. But are still pretty important. And one particular thing comes to mind. Satya and I started our podcast in 2021, and over the course of these 22 episodes have made small but steady efforts in engaging ourselves creatively and releasing that effort into the world. So that's one of my favorite 2021 memory. What's yours? Thanks for listening. See you next year. Bye.
Bye.